So we're going to leave the light on because Maribel is going to, we're going to talk about Maribel's problem with this little thing. Not a nice of these. He's a nice little dog. He's high in a little bit. I just want to talk about territoriality first because I think this is where we're going to probably end up with this. So a long time ago, I watched too much Star Wars. in a galaxy far, far away. I remember reading about dogs' territoriality, that they actually form a territory that is encompasses the same as our territory. In other words, they use our fences as their fences. They use our boundaries as their boundaries. And I have since decided that it's absolutely false. Dogs create their own boundaries, and they'll use ours, and then they create some more after that. So a dog that is in your house and your yard may think that that is their territory, but they also think that the neighbor's house and yard are their territory. And so what ends up happening, I believe, is you get a core territory, which is usually the inside of the house, and that is where the dog will really defend itself. And actually, if you really get down to it, their bed might be their really core territory. Then the next might be the house that they live in, and then their yard, if they have a yard. It becomes problematic in an apartment kind of thing because the dog absolutely will take all of their apartments as part of their territory. And then they across the street sometimes, and then in extreme territoriality cases, it will be the entire block. And you can really see these dogs because they're going to be worse in your area than they will anywhere else. So a lot of times what we'll talk about with dogs that are territorial is don't walk them in your neighborhood. And I have a client right now with a dog that's half German Shepherd and half flock guard. And I do not know why Great Pyrenees always escapes me, but anyway. And that dog, we're talking about doing territorial, the dog is highly territorial. In fact, I think I'm going to talk about him a little bit here, but essentially, one of the things I recommended is that they not walk him in his neighborhood because he's so much worse than his neighborhood. So territoriality is and we can know that it's pretty problematic and right there. But most of my clients just don't get it. They really don't get it. And most people who own dogs want to walk their dogs from their own house. They don't want to get in their car and walk someplace else. And yet, to me, that's not very much of a problem at all. I live in the suburbs. We don't have problems with parking.
But in the city, in San Francisco, a lot of people
you can't.
Have cars.
Yeah.
You just
can't.
And I mean, half the time my morning walk is from my house to my car with my dogs,
which
is 3 blocks away.
Yeah. So what me thinking this is easy for other people is not easy at all. So that is a really big deal when you have a dog that's territorial, is that they keep on expanding their territory. And one of the things they sometimes do, not all of them, but a lot of them, will do much more marking. Well, almost all dogs do more marking at the beginning of a walk than they do as the walk continues. Among other things, they have to empty their bladder, but they will mark. You know, we have 3 female dogs that I walk every day, and the first 5 minutes of the walk is all marking. No matter where it is, it's going to be all marking. So when you try to tell a client, like a lot of people do, don't let them mark in that first block or so, that's really hard. It's like taking a dog out of a shelter and saying, don't let them pee on the way out. And you're going, you know, because they have to pee so much that they're going to try to do it on the way out. And then, of course, they do mark as well. So that territory, you know, it is big. It's a really big, it's probably the number one reason why I see dogs with aggression issues is territoriality. They're aggressive to strangers on property or in their area. And so it is obviously a huge, huge deal. And sometimes dogs get very offensive on territories. Even a fearful dog will run the territory of the line of the territory and become aggressive on that territory. Do y'all remember the case of the woman who was killed in San Francisco several years ago?
Yeah.
And the two present canarios? I met one of those dogs. Yeah, I went to the San Francisco SPCA, where the dog was kept, and she was pretty bad. And she was they were absolutely enormous. These dogs, they were probably 180 pounds.
What were they?
The Preston Canarios. So they're big, and of course, as soon as it came out that they were Preston Canarios, the sale in Preston Canarios went up. You would think that people go, I don't want a dog like that. But no, I want a dog like that.
But they're also all over, breed restrictions, and the reality is that they're not actually that common in the dog.
No, they're not. They're just another, they're a mastiff. This could have been a Neapolitan mastiff. This did not have to be a Preston Canario. What ended up happening was this was territorial aggression. That's what this was. The dogs had been aggressive towards people in and around their apartment for years. People were scared of this dog, but they didn't ever report him because they were also scared of the owners, for good reason. The owners were really wacky. But the attack that took place right outside of their apartment, and one dog went for the owner, and then the other dog joined in. And not the owner, the woman. And the people were crazy, for sure. The people were nutty. But they didn't breed these dogs for aggression. They were aggressive. But there was a trigger, and the trigger, I think, was territoriality. When I met the dog, I was just, I wouldn't want to meet him. It was a dark night, or in the middle of the day. It didn't matter.
How did you meet the dog?
I was good friends with somebody who was running a program there called Give a Dog a Bone, which is a really nice program. It stopped being run there, but in San Francisco. But she runs it in, I think it's kind of almost national now, which essentially is trying to help dogs on death row. So she had a whole, it's very cool the stuff she did. These are dogs that you can't go into their runs because the law disallows it. And in San Francisco, they almost always had some dogs quite a few dogs that you couldn't go in the run. So she developed an entire program of stimulation for these dogs, which included obedience behind a run. They included different ways of teaching the dogs, having the dog stretch and do exercises back in a run. So it's called Give a Dog a Bone, and I'm pretty sure she's still got the website up.
They would, really cool. Do sandboxes, so they would put a sandbox in one end of the run, and they'd pair various stuff, and then go with the gelatins to the dog.
So there's all this kind of stuff that they were trying to do to stimulate these dogs, because they just, Tricia and I went into, this was several years ago, we went up to a shelter in the foothills where they had 13 pit bulls that had been taken from an owner who there was a complaint about viciousness with the dogs, but obviously all 13 of them were not. And they had been in these runs for 9 years.
What?
9 years. And we went up there, and they were, of course, some of the shelter staff had gotten to be very friendly with them, but they were all, they were part of a court case, so nobody could go in there. So nobody was actually touching them. For 9 years, nobody touched them. When we went there, first of all, of course, their muscles were just like, they no muscles left. But their nails were all, they were walking on their nails.
So they wouldn't even allow them to do basic?
No, they couldn't go in there and touch them. They were part of a court case, and the court was disallowing this. And so it was totally inhumane. But people had started to form attachments to them, and so they wanted somebody to come in and say what should happen to these dogs. So Tricia and I went up there, and we were just totally blown away. It was so sad. In the name of justice, these dogs are being abused. They were totally being abused. So we recommended that all but one be euthanized immediately, because the court case had ended. It was a drug case or something. I think that's what it was. No, they couldn't get in. They couldn't go in. They could give them food. They didn't get any veterinary care. They didn't get their nails clipped. They didn't get nothing. They didn't get anything at all. And there was nobody holding standards to these people at all. The shelter was totally, their hands were tied behind their backs. They couldn't do anything. So it was the court that was holding this. So anyway, there was one dog. We evaluated all of them. We did not do full evaluations. I don't remember hugging anyone. But, you know, but we did the rest of the evaluations, and they actually were pretty nice dogs. But from the point of view of being humane, we decided to put down all but one. One was the youngest one, and somebody in the shelter adopted that dog. And why did I tell this story? I can't remember where. Territoriality.
From the San Francisco.
But these dogs actually didn't show. They actually, when I come to think of it, they did show territoriality. We brought them out, and they were much nicer when we brought them out because they were in these runs all the time.
Could you give a dog a bone type of thing and use them in any way?
It could have. There was nothing. There was no one to do it. You know, somebody has to do that. There have to be volunteers or staff to do that kind of stuff.
And those dogs were
euthanized. Very euthanized. Yeah. It was a good thing.
Yeah.
It was a really good thing.
Were the owners prosecuted?
Yeah, but the owner wasn't prosecuted. The owner was prosecuted in this drug case. They were not prosecuted.
No, I meant in the San Francisco lady.
The woman that was killed?
Yeah.
Yeah. She was, the guy was convicted of using, I think, the dog as a weapon. And the woman was convicted of a few other things. But they were so, you'd have to look it up. It's if you're not familiar with the story, it is so wild.
The guy who actually owned the dog was in prison.
Yes.
People had adopted him at the age of 35.
Oh, right.
And then they saw the guy, they were just taking care of these dogs, and the guy was like this.
He's like a cult leader almost.
It was just this total wacky.
It was the whole story was just absolutely ridiculous, you know, like.
Can I ask a completely unrelated question?
Yes.
So I was thinking of the give a dog a bone. One of my students said that she has this white Maltese mix, and it fit somebody, and it was from the San Francisco SPCA, and so the San Francisco SPCA took the dog back and is working with it, and will call them when the dog's ready, and the family can send it back.
Oh, really?
That's not true, is it?
Well,
I was like, wow,
they can be working with the dog. There's no question that, but they're probably not going to. If in the case of territoriality, they're going to need to be doing a lot of work on impulse control, and they would need to be doing that in the home. So the chances are it's not exactly going to do a whole lot of transferring, unless they're going to transfer the information to the woman too.
That's what they said they're going to do.
That they're going to teach her too.
Yeah,
that's great.
It seems crazy.
Let me know.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't put it out of reason, but it seems like it would be difficult to teach that. It's very difficult to teach bite inhibition. An awful lot of it has to do with management and relationship. And if you're taking the management and relationship out and you're just leaving training, you know, it's the age-old whole battle between the trainers of dolphins, like the wild animal trainers and dog trainers. Wild animal trainers say it's pretty easy to train a behavior, which, you know, and they're training giraffes and gorillas and all these, and these big vicious animals, and they're training them to put their arm out to get shots and all that kind of stuff. And they're just using operant conditioning, and they're doing a really good job with it. And they didn't understand, as dog trainers, they went, yeah, but you don't live with them.
Right.
When you live with an animal, it's completely different. You don't, these training things just don't necessarily transfer. They were completely, they used to do an awful lot of talks at APDT, and they were just fantastic, but they didn't get it because they didn't have dogs. They just didn't get the whole relationship thing.
Do you think territorial aggression, like, tied to resource guarding, or is it?
Everything's tied to resource guarding.
Okay.
When you get around to it, everything is resource guarding. You know, this is my house.
Right.
This is my person, this is my bone, this is mine. So it all, we actually draw lines where there are no lines.
So if you have a dog who resource guards their owner, and then you move to a new place, and then they're, you know, obviously they're still going to resource guard their owner, is that still considered like territorial, or?
No, because resource guarding an owner is resource guarding, because they will resource guard an owner away from the territory.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, the territoriality requires a territory. And that territory can be a house, and it can also be a car.
Yeah.
The movable territory. As far as the dog is concerned, the miracle on earth. I get to go from here to there in a territory. I mean, my God, how good can it get? Except for poor dogs who get sick, and they hate it, you know.
Yeah.
So territorial aggression can be, a dog might race out the door and attack a neighbor getting into or out of his car. And of course, I've had two clients where this has happened. In fact, one right now where they've got this big pity. He's a beautiful dog. He's scary as all get out because he's, as soon as you meet him, he's fine, but he's really territorial. And one of the kids left the gate, back gate open. He went out the back gate, up through the front gate, over to their neighbor's house, and scared the bejesus out of the person, you know, trying to get into his car. And she now all the entire neighborhood is now scared of that dog. And you know, when I met the dog, I was scared of the dog. But now, of course, he's nice because he likes me and everything is fine. So, man, we're doing things like double locks on doors. And, you know, I'm not keen on invisible fences, so I'd rather have a double fence. So they're doing a double fence and double doors and all kinds of stuff because he's too big to be have that much freedom. He's just too big and scary. Yeah.
With territoriality, with the owners letting you in the house, is that showing the dog that...
Not usually, no.
So how do you break through that initial...
How do you meet the dog in the first place?
Yeah.
And that was really interesting with Fiber. He was, you know, like... what I did is I asked her to put the dog in another room, and then I went into the kitchen and sat at the table, and she brought in the dog, and... If they have obedience on the dog, what they do is they bring in the dog and then they have the dog sit, look at them for a treat, come in a little further, sit, look at them for a treat, and then come over and smell this part of me, right here, because I'm sitting at a table and I don't want to be doing direct eye contact because that can be challenging.
Right.
And so he came up to me and he's doing this. This was only a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
And he's going, and this one, okay. Like, everything is fine, Fiber, we're okay. And then after a couple minutes, he's going, okay. But then, of course, you know, he has some fear, too. So when I get up, he's like, who are you now?
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm the same person I was when I was sitting down. So, you know, it was really...
Do you ever offer treats as a way of enhancing your relationship?
Well, I used to.
Okay.
But don't.
Okay.
Because what happens is that if it's a fearful dog, it's going to go into conflict.
Yeah, of course.
Right?
Yeah.
I would not recommend that using treats.
So what do you mean it goes into conflict?
Well, then they want the treat, but they are too scared to get close to you. So they come close to you, take the treat, and then bark or bite. So we really don't want that. On the Siba grad list, we were talking about that. That wasn't Fiber. That was another dog.
Yeah.
It's a Chow Chow. The one that Tricia was talking about?
Yeah.
That's a Chow Chow. And the Chow has bitten people. And the veterinary behaviorist told the people with the Chow to have strangers give the dog treats.
Yeah.
And she says it's not helping. It's making it worse.
Yeah.
And it will make it worse. So, yeah, you would never do that. You just don't do that. And so then everybody on the list is like, well, you could do it if you just arc. No. You're trying to get people to not be people. Okay, all right, person, start acting like a dog. I am going to bark now, you know, and it just doesn't work.
Yeah,
I guess. Yeah, good. Yeah.
Thank you.
And it's
just
not going to work.
The average person's not going to do that when they come into your home. Like I had a friend, and I said, you don't have the dog that's afraid of people. You don't have them give treats. You give the dog treats.
Yeah.
And they stay, and the dog can be as far away. Oh, but my sister, and then she was tired, and she came over, and I was like, well. So the average person doesn't listen.
What
they
about
just
throwing treats at the dog?
You can throw treats at the dog. That's fine. Treat retreat is great. There's no problem
with
treat retreat. But here's the other thing. You get some of these dogs, and they take a treat, and then they go, more.
Oh, yeah.
And you go, I don't have any more. I want more. And I think that the dog that really taught me that was a dog in my office at the Humane Society, and I was teaching, it was a big mastiff, and I was teaching him down. Yeah, he was on a tie down because he was not a nice dog, and he was on a tether. So we were doing down, and I did my hand signal for down and whatnot, and I gave him a treat, and I did it again. I did a treat, and then the third time I was going to give him a treat after, instead of luring it, right? Because you start to put it after, and he went, "Where's the fucking treat?" Boom at me. Excuse my language, but it felt like that.
Wow.
And he snapped at me. He would have bitten me. And this is one of those cases where he really literally would have bitten me, but he hit the end of the tether. And I thought, what I just did there is I told him to expect something. And one of the worst punishments that you can give to a person or a human is to take away something they expect. So that is more powerful than almost any other kind of punishment. Honey, I'll get you an ice cream cone as soon as I get home. And there you have no intention of doing it, and you don't give them the ice cream cone, they're going to hate you forever. Right? So your expectation, ask guys who get, you know, go out on a date expecting to take your girl home and get to bed with her. They get pissed, right? So that is so powerful that you have to be really careful. So now, I might do treat retreat with a fearful dog, but I don't use treats in training until I'm training the dog, until I know what kind of relationship we're going to be having here. You know, all these things that I've learned over 30 years that don't appear to be reasonable until you start thinking about it, you know. So in the video, I will take out the swear word. Maybe. Okay. So this a dog might bite somebody as soon as they come in the door. Wait till they're already in, then butt bite them. Those are the dogs that have some fear. Of course, most territory, you know, it's like what you were saying about resource guarding. You know, resource guarding really runs a huge gamut that we keep on parsing. In the case of aggression, probably 99.9% of aggression is based in fear. And because if you're not afraid, you don't need to worry, because, you know, about things. It's like your dog. He's not afraid, right? He thinks everybody's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he's, you know, he's not going to be territorial because, after all, they just came to see me.
Yeah.
This is a good thing, you know. And take some stuff. Here, there's that stuff over there. That there. We're generous in this house.
Well, that's what they had. They had the thing when a couple of years ago, there was a chihuahua that chased somebody out of a cigar shop that was being held up by a gun. They had the security video of this guy in a ski mask, the chihuahua just taking out. Somebody mentioned how they had a pit bull, and the whole house had been completely cleaned out of everything, but the dog toys had been left over because the pit bull had just taken the toy to all of the to the robbers trying to get them to play the entire time.
There's a commercial out there about security systems.
Okay, yeah.
The guys are in the house to rob it, the German Shepherd comes up, and they're going, oh my God. He drops the ball in front of
him. When I lived in San Francisco, I got broken into. I had two Cairn Terriers at the time. And I know they barked, but we lived in a pretty isolated place, so I'm sure it didn't bother them. They broke in through a back window, and what they did is they saw the kibble right there, the burglars did, and they just spread kibble all over the floor. And then they took our TV, they took radios, and they went out the front door, and we lived on the, like, 80 stairs, on the bottom of 80 stairs. And I get home from work that evening, and there is the two Cairn Terriers sitting there, fat, waiting for me, down the bottom. They'd eaten a lot of the kibble. Yeah. They went, oh, we had visitors while you were gone.
Didn't they offer you a TV?
That's terrible.
So why is this that if somebody comes to our front door and makes a spine, the offer doesn't even get up, doesn't work. But if they come to the front gate, it goes ballistic. If somebody comes in the yard,
so which dog is this?
Mick.
Your big dog?
Yeah.
Your big dog guards the gate but not the front door?
Yeah.
So for some reason or other, he thinks that they made it to the front door, they're safe.
Yeah. But in the house, he's so relaxed, doesn't even really get up.
So he has to be in the yard.
But in the yard, he's a nightmare.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Okay, so his territory is not the house.
Yeah.
His territory is the yard.
How'd that happen?
Well, I don't know.
So always have to look for the yard if there's burglars.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's what it seems to me, is that the dog, he's given the territory, I would think it probably has a sense of responsibility towards the yard, because you're probably not out there as often as you are in the house.
Yeah.
So his sense of responsibility in the house is lessened because the big bosses are there, but not in the yard. So he's probably given, and he's a healer, so he's, you know he's going,
yeah.
I really gotta think. Yeah, I've gotta think about all this stuff. Yeah. So yeah, I would say that's probably, so what you need to do then is, do you do much obedience in the front yard?
Yeah. not enough. Maybe mostly in the house.
Okay, so what is mostly in the house?
Yeah.
Yeah, do it in the front yard. Yeah. Try doing it, and a lot of it in the front yard. Do a lot of sits and downs and comes and stays and all that kind of stuff. And try to make it as fun as possible. But that might help. And then you go inside and he's probably still going to do it. But.
And then the chihuahuas get in when it comes in the front door.
Yeah. So he's
a double layer.
So what he's doing, he says, okay, you guys take care of the little guys take care of that stuff. Yeah. Okay, so delivery people or postal carriers obviously get bitten a lot, and that's because of territoriality. And this is also, unfortunately, really, people don't understand that their dogs, they're very nice dogs, they're territorial when they're, you know, somebody be fixing their, you know, their dishwasher, and the guy's got his butt hanging out because he's and the dog comes over and bites him, and the owner's like, oh no, he couldn't have done that. He did. But he couldn't have, but he did. You know? Because, well, then it must have been something you did. I was working in your dishwasher, you know. So that's all territoriality, and of course that, and it happens all the time. So where was I the other day? I know, I was back in your part of town. These people have two greyhounds, and so they just adopted the second greyhound, and so they were trying to make sure everything was okay. But they do have UPS people who bring, they live on a really nice big piece of property, it's beautiful, but they have UPS people or whatever carry their packages all the way in to the house to deliver it. And the dogs, oddly enough, will kind of run after them and snap at them. And greyhounds are, people think of them as benign, but they're not necessarily benign. They have as much territoriality as any other dog. They also tend to have a lot of resource guarding of food because when they're in the racetrack, they never share anything. So what I suggested was getting a box and putting the box right on the outside of the fence right near where they park their car. And they're like, oh, that's a good idea. I said, yes. That'll be an extra $150. But, you know, just to prevent that territoriality.
Right.
Yeah, and I had a good friend who had a Belgian Tervurin, and we did the same thing for her because her Terv was just, Tervs are really territorial. And she would hit that wall, you know, and scare that bejesus out of people. And so we just made a box and put it, you know, and then there was instruction for delivery of packages, please put them in this box. It worked out really well. Now you have to be, can't live in San Francisco.
Right.
You know?
No, then you just have them delivered to my shop.
Yeah.
Neighborhood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, depending on where you are. Yeah, I mean, it's really tough. We don't let our dogs in our front yard unless we're there, so they can put things in our front yard. But it depends on where you allow your dog to be. But this is all territoriality. It's probably, you know, I would say, I have no proof of this at all, but we know that most bites to people go to our children who are this big and smaller, right? That is the most common bite, and the most common bite there is to the face because the children's faces and the dog's faces are very close to each other. And the dog is usually doing a disciplinary bite, which is done to a puppy's face. That's why children get bitten there. But the second probably is to UPS people or to delivery people or to work people, because they're always coming on territory without telling anybody that they're coming. And so, can you imagine now if Amazon is doing this by putting people in people's cars?
Yeah.
If somebody's got their dog in their car? Mm. Well, that would be good.
Well, they have to come in the house.
And they come in the house, too.
Crazy.
Yeah, the whole thing is crazy. So, I mean, I remember talking to a postal carrier. I talked to PG&E several times and then to USPS. And I was down in Sausalito talking to the USPS, to the Postal Service people. And they said that, I said, how many of you guys, there are about 25 guys there, or people, and I said, how many of you people actually been bitten? And they all raised their hand, all of them. And then I said, how many of you have been bitten more than once? And about half raised their hand. How many have been bitten more than twice? And about a quarter raised their hands. And then I asked, the one guy kept raising his hand over. I said, how many times have you been bitten? He said, 26 times. I said, man, you are doing something wrong. Yeah, they report them. And men, if your dog bites a postal carrier, What happens at the post office is they say, we will not deliver any mail on your block.
Really?
Yes, it's a way of being punitive. So they say, unless you fix this, it's not just we won't deliver mail to you, we won't deliver mail to anybody on your block. And so it's, I think it might be after two bites or something, but they will, and so you fix it.
Yeah.
You
it's
fix
a problem.
It.
I did it right along with an animal control officer at Oakland once, and we spent the whole afternoon just going from address to address to address from U.S. postal carriers saying, I won't deliver here because this happened. I won't deliver here. I'm talking to owners. That's the entire afternoon. This is just one day.
Yeah, just trying to educate. Yeah,
yeah.
That your dog actually will bite you.
90% of the animal control.
I don't get
sure.
Dogs should be security.
Are there any guards most of the
time? You know,
people do that.
The number of people I've suggested that they get a P.O. box is amazing, and they go, oh wow.
Good idea.
Or they put their mailbox out, you know,
yeah, on the street.
On the street.
Yeah.
You know, oh my God, you can do that? Yes, you can do that.
Yeah.
If you can do that, you don't have to have it. So, yeah.
I have a question. I heard a rumor that having a sign on your property that says
"Beware of dog."
Beware of dog is actually
not good.
Yes, it admits that you have a potential.
Yes, there are two things. First of all, if you have a dangerous dog, you have to put a sign up like that. If your dog has been deemed dangerous, there is a sign that you have to put up, and you have to do all kinds of other things as well. So. But if you have a normal dog and you put beware of dog sign on it, if somebody gets bitten, they can say that you had a nuisance that you knew was a nuisance and that you did not take care of it. So yeah, it can end up being a problem in court.
But couldn't you switch that around and say, but you came over anyway, even though you knew?
You can do that, yeah. I have a client right now whose pit bull bit a little child, and they got the dog off of, it's not euthanized, but they're not, they cannot have the dog in the neighborhood ever again.
Yeah.
And it was for that very reason.
Yeah.
Yeah. The dog, they had told the kids not to come over. The kids came over anyway, and the dog bit. And so it became it's always the dog's fault.
Yes. Yeah, it is.
It's always the dog's fault. And it's just, you have to be aware of that. When we had our Rottweilers, we had our mail delivered. It was a P.O. box. And I mean, there's just, the Rotties were good dogs. I really didn't worry about them, but you know, cut the cards. That's what you do. Okay, so are you ready?
Sure.
All right, since we've got some territoriality here, if you can.
I don't know Mary Bell. She's Mary Bell. And dog walker, and owner of, five dogs now?
Five.
Five dogs, all of them small. And this one is?
Izai, and he's 2 years old. I got him from Merced Animal Shelter, and he was just a little butt.
Uh-huh.
And if I had known back then what I know now, I wouldn't have done what I did, which is to just shelter him when he was a baby because he wasn't vaccinated yet, and let's keep him safe rather than expose him to the world. Maybe then that's part of the problem. He wasn't well socialized. But don't trust that sweet face. He's a total bug at home. I mean, territorial issues are crazy. I want to get into boarding, and I don't know how to do it because anybody who want to see my place, he's going to go into full blown attack mode.
So has he ever bitten a person?
Nobody has nipped, so I guess yes, that's a bite. And I thought he wouldn't cross the boundary, but he will. I had a friend stand in my backyard, and he just didn't get over himself and stop barking, and he went at her feet. So I can't calm him down. He never gets to the stage where he actually just sits and stares. He doesn't do that. But he will just not stop challenging and get he wants you out of there.
All right, does he do this, and he's done this since he was how old?
You know, he was actually a perfect puppy, and I want to say around 6 months or so.
So was Luke.
Yeah, he was perfect. I mean, I remember, you know, passing him on to friends when he was done with his vaccinations, and I finally took him out, and he was fine, and then he became incredibly suspicious around maybe 6 months, and when people tried to touch him, he did this. You can't pet him.
So did you have other dogs at that time?
Yes.
How many dogs did you have at that point?
Four, maybe?
Four. And do you think his behavior was influenced by them?
It's really hard to say. I want to say he's now the main problem, but it seems that one dog has negative behavior and they all seem to pick up on it and join in. But he perfected it.
That's nice to know you've got a dog that's perfect. I think you're really cute. He said he just told me that she's lying. Everything she said was not true.
I used to have cleaning people come over, my one luxury in life. I mean, it was a nightmare. I had to be there all the time and kind of monitor him and keep him in the backyard. And if I was able to calm him down and he saw them go into one room, he was okay. They came out going into another room. You just saw them. Same people. It's like he could not understand. And he would, and giving treats does not work. I would, you know, at that time I thought that would work. I would give them treats and they would give it to him, and then he's like, thank you, and then again, full blown bark and time. Does not work.
And how old is he now?
He's 2 years.
2 years old?
2 years old.
Okay, so he's been doing this now for a year and a half.
It's working.
Give or take.
Yeah. So, and just the other day, our neighbor and I share a backyard just with a deer fence, so it's completely see-through. And he's known this guy for his entire life, and he's up at the deer fence and just jumping as high as you can imagine. If he were a person, he would have a fire red head like this. I mean, just like, and he barks with a high-pitched bark, really annoying. But he's just like, and he sees him basically on a daily basis, and every time charged.
So when he starts barking, do the other dogs start barking too?
Yeah.
So once he starts it going, they all keep going.
Yeah, and I've actually, I sometimes watch the other dogs. They will be looking at a completely different direction, and he's setting them off, and they bark, and I'm like, you don't even know what you're barking at. But they all join in, and that, you know, it's such a huge problem because it's impossible to monitor five, and I have this problem.
Yeah, you do. It's definitely. So, questions from you guys. Yes?
Is he like this with people outside of the home, or is it only when they come on your property?
Oh, well, I wish he would behave at home like, I mean, this is beautiful. You know, I didn't quite know what to expect, but this is, I would love this behavior. When he just, I mean, I can tell he's insecure. He's not touching his toys. He's kind of observing things, but I would love this where he's like hanging low. So he doesn't behave the same way. But he started doing that in the car. You know, we were driving and we will stop at a stoplight and he looks at the other car or you know, people just walking by and he's starting to growl and
What happens? What's his daily routine like? Where does he sleep?
With me. She had taught me to put them all in crates and they were doing well. I was being disciplined. And then I had a really stressful encounter in life and I had needed them all in bed with me again for comfort.
Compliance.
Are they still all sleeping in the bed?
Yeah. So I know that, you know, it's me. I'm a big problem.
Okay. No, you're not a big problem.
I'm making it worse.
But there may be some things that you have to change again. Yeah.
When does he stop? Like what gets him to stop?
He really doesn't. And it seems like he has to have the last word. You know, I try everything and I shush him and he's still gives it. You know,
is it you taking him away from the situation so he doesn't stop?
It's like, so I've tried to put him in a different room, but the fact that he still hears them to him, and I live in a quiet neighborhood, so he noises that, you know, people in the house, he will hear everything, he can pick it up. It's not muffled and tuned out by traffic or...
Yeah, so he should probably live in the city.
Yeah.
Do you have a routine with him where he does things for you at your request, like will he do obedience? What I'm getting at is I'm curious about where he is confident and what he feels good at. And so I'm curious if there's anything in your relationship where he can be a really good boy and you're proud of him.
He has selective hearing, so he knows that he gets rewarded. I never punish him for anything. Even if he doesn't, I call him and he doesn't listen, he comes after the 10th time, which he's not supposed to, I still praise him. So he knows it's a safe place for him to come back to. But, you know, there's times when I last potty call, we're going to go outside, and he's just laying on the couch, wake me.
What do you think?
He makes his own decisions.
But I guess, okay. So I'm wondering in that particular case, if you leashed him and said it's time to go, and I'm gonna guide you, because I'm wondering, well, I don't want to jump to conclusions yet. It's still question time, so I'm not going to say anything. I'm going to stop there. But I'm curious. With your relationship with him, though, if you know maybe practicing more. I'm just curious about that. Like instead of him having last word, like you just said, if you could have a last word.
I'm interested in the last word. So
yeah,
you'll too. Tell him something, and then he kind of goes home.
I mean, it's literally like talking back. It's like, I'm going to have the upper hand.
I mean, I'm surprised you didn't even ask him. Okay, so is he ever apart from the other four dogs?
No.
So they're always together. Would you say that he is...
Let me take this way. Rarely, I mean, when I have a spot in my hype group, most of the time he gets
that spot.
Because I think he needs the most exposure.
Okay, and how often might that happen?
Maybe twice a week, 2 to 3 times a week.
Okay. Other than that, what kind of exercise does he get?
The backyard.
So
because it's so hard taking
they don't get walks.
Them up. No.
Okay. And none of the dogs get walks except for occasional parts of your hikes. Yeah?
Right.
Because okay.
It's so stressful to take them out because they just...
So if you were to take one of them out or two of them out, would the other dogs bark like crazy because you're leaving them alone?
They go into howl mode. They howl like... I mean, my neighbor tells me when I leave, they howl for about 20 minutes and then they stop. But I've waited in the car to see, and it literally a minute after I've left the house, they start. And I can hear one starting, and they all join in. It sounds like little wolf cubs. It's crazy. It's like why, you know?
Okay, so you from what I understand then that you have your individual relationship with each dog is almost it's almost you don't have one. You have a relationship with all of the dogs
right. Together.
Do they ever get individual attention? I mean, not walks, just attention. Do you do like, I'm going to work on you and you guys are just not going to get work or anything like that?
No.
Okay. Could you do that?
I should.
No, I didn't say that.
I can.
Can you?
Yes.
Because you might be able to work something like that in your life?
Yes.
We can talk about how you would do it, but it would be really good if you could do something like that, because I think that one of the issues here, it seems to me, is that he's not looking to you for leadership.
Right.
Correct.
He's looking to himself for leadership
Correct.
And the other dogs for his, you know, really I get to do this kind of thing.
Yeah.
It seems like a really nice dog. Mm-hmm.
He is. Which is why it's so frustrating, because he could be.
Yeah. You
know.
And you live a very highly stressed life. So your life is stressful. And then you come home and you have a stressful life with the dogs at home.
Mm-hmm.
So both places, what you're going for walks. Dog walkers, I really respect you guys because it's hard to be a good dog walker.
Yeah.
You actually have to be really good about watching your environment, making sure you have the really good dogs that you're walking.
Mm-hmm.
There are people who are terrible dog walkers, but a good dog walker is very vigilant, is earning their money. So, and it can be highly stressed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So. And I know, if it's anything like me, I mean, I get home and sometimes I just don't want to have any dogs. I'm like, oh God, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm, go away.
Yeah.
I don't want you guys around. So I think that one of the first things you need to worry about is your stress level.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see if we can pull that in, which I know we talked about before.
Yeah.
But let's ask any more questions about him. Yeah.
So the issue is he's reactive or territorial to other dogs, or is it
people
also?
People.
And dogs too, right?
And dogs too. So when dogs come in, but he's able to accept them at some point, he's like, oh, I guess you're around. And some of them, he's like, you know, the ears pulled back, play, bow, and he immediately likes them and starts playing with them. It depends on the dog, but with people, it's like, I really don't want you here.
Can you handle him as much as you want?
Yeah.
Okay, no problem at all?
No problem at all. He's got the gentlest mouth.
Okay. And you can cut his nails or anything like that?
He's
He doesn't look like he's got long nails.
Yeah,
he's
no,
naturally.
He just kind of files it himself. He cleans his own teeth with the chew toys. I mean, this guy is just, I mean, there's nothing I can't do. I can put my hand in his food. Well, he's just, he potty trained himself. It's amazing. This dog, I've never potty trained.
Well, I think this is the problem. I think what he's done is he's made up his mind about how his life is supposed to happen.
Yeah.
And it just happens like that. And then it's been reinforced because look how powerful I am.
Yes, you.
Alright. So, this is such a good case of only territoriality, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because look at him now. Although, let's see if I can.
He looked up.
He's staring at us all. He's so happy.
He's fine.
Do you think he would react any differently if he came home with you and there was someone else already in your house?
That's, I don't know, that's never happened.
Okay, so, all right, so some suggestions from you guys. I have some ideas, but looking for you. Suggestions to enter more questions or analyzing. Yeah.
I'm just wondering, what bothers you more, the barking at the neighbor in the yard? Is that more stressful or are people coming in your home?
It's kind of equal, because it's all on the same turf for me, on the same.
And she's looking to try to be able to board dogs, which means she's having people come over to her house.
I can imagine people coming in and walking right back out. This is not where I want my dog boarded. This is you know, this is a nuisance. I can, you know.
So I boarded dogs for 5 years in my home, and I had one Barbie dog at the time, and I just had to manage that. I knew when clients were coming, because nobody ever surprises you, that dog had to be away with the chew toy, and it was management, if I wanted that client.
Yeah.
Because I tried training, I tried all these things, I got better. But if you're focused on a person and you're stressed and nervous because you're trying to make a business deal, I think you need to set up some management systems.
Yeah, I'm thinking about management. Now, the first thing I knew, you had a question or a thought.
I forgot.
Okay, the first thing I'd do is go back to your crates. I mean, you've got a whole bunch of crates for the dogs, but then are they in the crates ever?
Yes, they eat in their crates, and that has made a huge difference because they don't compete with each other.
Right, because that was one of the big issues.
Yeah, yes.
Okay, so let's start there. All right. I would say they should be in the crates, not only for eating, but at least once a day for nap time. And it might be that you give them a greenie, each of them a greenie or something like that. That's a fairly easy to eat thing that is really tasty, and greenies are like dog crack. They really love them. And then start off just with him. While the other dogs are in the crates, take him to another part of your house and start working on impulse control exercises, because that's, I think, where you got to go here. And we can talk about it. Is Aspen upset?
Speaking of impulse control.
No, I think there's dogs playing in there.
Does that make sense? So, because if we can make it quiet, put them in their crate, give them something, but we need to do two things. You need to make sure that the dogs can be quiet when you want them to be quiet, not just when they're eating. So you have to actually expand that. And then you need to be able to work with him to start teaching him that you're more important than he is. Because right now, he thinks he's the most important one. And you have a limited amount of work that you can do just because of your lifestyle. So does that make sense?
Yeah.
Could you put the dogs in the crates once a day other than when they're eating?
Yes.
When you're home? Would that be possible? It's just kind of like nap time.
Mm-hmm.
Just like when I put in Aspen in there just because, you know, she goes in there. That's what we want her to do.
Yeah.
So this is, I mean, that's one of the wonderful thing about crates is they're nice places for like little timeouts, mini timeouts.
Mm-hmm.
And then to bring him out, and now he's getting special attention from you, which is a really good thing.
Mm-hmm.
But he should start doing predominantly sit stays. I mean, the problem is that my brain is going all the way to the nth degree, which is that he should be doing a sit stay when somebody, you know, if you have somebody in the house and you bring him out and you have him do a sit stay, so he starts to learn that he has to be impulse control then. And that's going to take a while, but you still could have him start to learn to do something
mm-hmm.
that is focused on you.
when Aspen barks, because Aspen's a reflexive barker, we actually call her when she barks, and then we have her do a sit and a down, and then we give her a treat for the sit and down. Mm-hmm. So instead of trying to tell them to stop barking, we call them to us to bark.
Or to not bark.
That's not my preference. But it's either that or, you know, you get this little dog going, right? You know, because they're very fast and they can run away.
Yeah.
But you call them to you, then you do a behavior. And so now when she barks, she immediately comes. It's like bark, come, bark, come. You still get the bark. And she may be barking all the way to me, like, bark, 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 bark. But she gets there and then she'd be good.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I would think of that. And then the other thing you were talking about with management, I'm thinking I went to her house. I would actually, make it so they're in that back room there, and then you have the front room, right? Mm-hmm. Can you meet with clients there? If you can teach the dogs to be calm and quiet in their crates in the back room, if you can, like, put the dogs in the back room and start going out into the front and making noises, and then, you know, just on a regular basis, so you just start to make noises, including ringing doorbells and all that kind of stuff. And if they're quiet, tell them they're good. There's not a lot of treat stuff you can do here, but they just have to learn to be good with it. Then you can, they don't even need to know, unless you want them to go in the back.
Trying to figure out how to get them to be quiet, because I've had them in crates.
Yeah.
And that has been a situation where they realized, you know, there was something that they needed to react to, and they did. And they every single one was barking. Yes, the crates have been
covered
in the past, and now they're uncovered again, but I can cover them.
Yeah, I think it would be something where you'd cover the crates, you know, when you need to, rather than all the time or anything.
I have uncovered them again because I have one little marker who just I do so much laundry.
I bet you do. Yeah, I mean, I think it's wonderful that you stopped at 5. I really do, because you've got a really big heart. You want to have more, right?
Plus 5 cats.
Yeah, plus 5 cats. So you have to. So anybody else? So those are the things off the top of my head. But anybody else? I mean, this is real territorial aggression. Yeah.
I remember my question. So are there any other people that he likes, that he's come to like? And what happened, if he does, how did, was it just over time, or what did you do?
My former business partner is the only one who can do the same thing as me. Other than that,
but even just like be around another person. I don't even mean like handling him. I get that not all dogs like that, but just being able to be like, okay, you're in the house. It's.
I mean, I really don't have any people over. It's just us.
Yeah.
You know,
so
I'm the only person that they
what you really want to do is get more people.
Yes.
Right.
What about the neighbor that he barks at, who's known him for his whole life? Is there a way you could have him over to start doing the, like, really work on the, you guys are in the other room and be quiet. Excellent, you guys. Thank you. I'm going to go out and ring the doorbell.
Yeah.
Be quiet. Yes. And then get him in to ring the doorbell once.
I could probably bribe him to come.
Yeah, I mean,
it's
because he knows
that
it's starting to
grating
him.
Because
it sounds like
have a glass of wine.
Yeah,
a glass of wine and a sedative.
Here's your
Do the other dogs bark as much? Is there any way? Because I was just also thinking, it sounds like they're all beating up. Is there any way he could be by himself? And do you have any calm dogs that could be out when people come?
I used to have calm dogs.
But they feed off
each
other.
You could see
them,
that some dogs don't react and aren't afraid. Maybe that would help.
The group dynamic is amazing. It is so powerful. It's just, I mean, I'm surprised every time, because he really dictates the level of intensity. I think if you weren't doing it, then the others would be.
Yeah, well, remember that it always goes, the amount of excitement will always go to the lowest, the highest level of excitement. It has nothing to do with rank. So this has to do with, if one dog is really barking, all the other dogs will bark, whether, no matter what their rank is.
Right.
And or all the dogs will get excited, depending on how they're, you know, how they show their excitement.
Yeah.
Because it is, nature has made it so that if there's danger, that one animal will notice the danger and everybody else will respond to it. And that's what's going on. So he's going, there's danger, and everybody else says, oh my God, there's danger. Well, what they really need is Steve's dog to come in. Except for your dog might even start going, well, I guess that there's something to be worried about, you know.
So yeah, I mean, you've got pack dynamics. Every dog you add is going to add more pack dynamics mm-hmm. to that.
Yeah.
And we've really noticed that in our household. Aspen was not nearly as barky before we got Flocka, the Chihuahua. And even though she's not as barky as Aspen, Aspen got more barky. Mm-hmm. And then with Heather, who is not barky at all, Aspen got more barky still. So you keep adding dogs, you're going to add to that reactivity issue. Mm-hmm. So I think that the biggest thing here is you can't stop the aggression. Because the aggression is a side effect of the arousal. You have to work on the arousal. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Totally.
It's like if you were in a shelter environment and you were trying to stop the dogs from being barrier aggressive, then you actually have to do management to stop the arousal, because you're not going to be able to stop the barrier aggression until you got the arousal level down.
Right.
So you have to start it at that level. So that's why I say that I know if you wanted them to sleep in the bed with you, that's up to you. You know, if you're not getting any sleep, which I think is one of the things we talked about, then they should be in the crate. But if you get good sleep when they're in the bed with you, that's fine. That's not causing your issue. Your issue is that they get excited too quickly. He responds. He overreacts. And he can become a, at least you don't have the border collie anymore.
Yes. Thank you, Jesus, she found a home.
Yeah. So this was the border collie that went after the other dog. So
yeah.
One of the other dogs.
So I had to keep them separate, her separate from the rest of the pack, which was adding a lot of stress, but she got successfully rehomed for the second time.
So you're really thinking about management. You have to really, really think about it. How can I calm this down? To the extent that, you know, your ultimate goal is going to be to have people come bring their dogs. But, so if somebody comes to my house for a consult, which didn't happen very often because I don't really like doing people's homes, but all of our dogs are in the back bedroom and there's music playing.
Mm-hmm.
And they're in their crates. And people who come to the house never even know there's a dog there. And that's kind of what you want to be.
I would love that. And I have
But it takes training.
What is it called? I Calm Dog, the classic music.
Yeah.
Well, that doesn't work unless
it
the dogs are quiet.
It doesn't
to
do
listen.
Anything.
You said there's one flaw, because people are going to want to meet your dogs. I just know, like, we could keep, that's why this one, because you keep just him back. If they know you have five dogs and they come for a tour and your five dogs are in crates and they don't meet them, it's going to make people feel nervous.
Yes.
So
yeah.
You can have some out and maybe the instigator.
Or you could bring a couple out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know. And I do think most people are pretty understanding about barking dogs.
Yeah.
You know, I know the things that really turn people off about going to homes for daycare and whatnot is the smell. Mm-hmm. And then if it smells, it'll turn them off right away. Mm-hmm. But the noise not quite as much because they understand about barking a little bit more. But I just think that. You know, setting it up, like we're talking about, those are things that are really important, but he needs to understand, you know, how to work on a sit and stay in and out and all that, and a long one. Look up, I was going to talk about this anyway, the protocols for, what's your face? Relaxation protocols.
Okay.
I'll send them to you.
Okay.
But essentially, relaxation protocols, Dr. Karen Overall's relaxation protocols, and you can barely get past page one. I think 11 pages, but essentially it's a really it's a step way to work on control and relaxation. It doesn't feel like it's relaxing because the dog goes into a sit and then you give him a treat. And then you step away, and then you come back again, you give him another treat. But there's a real, step-by-step thing. You know what you did? Do you mind if I talk about your protocol that you did?
Yeah,
for certification, what Joel did was just absolutely spectacular. Why don't you tell us about it? What was going on with the dog? This is a dog at the shelter.
Jax, he was just very stressed out and really kind of hyper. What part do you want me to?
Well, okay, well, I'll tell it, and then you can tell me if I'm wrong. How's that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Sure.
So he was not getting adopted because he was very aggressive, right?
Yeah.
And so people weren't looking at him because he was not presenting very well. And yet he was a nice dog once you had him out. Is that correct? Pretty much.
Oh, and there was the mounting issue.
Oh, and he had some mounting issues, okay.
Which, to me, that wasn't such a big deal.
But
it would be done, yeah.
But what Joel did with this dog, and this is in a shelter environment, is he worked on going into and coming out of the run, and going into and coming out of the run, and going into and coming out of the run, for how long?
A couple of months,
yeah. And it was a progression from the dog going crazy when he was coming out of the run and going back into the run, both, to getting better and better and better. And luckily you had that one run that was like out in the boonies someplace.
Yeah, that helped out a lot.
That you could work on it someplace else before you worked on it in a high highly arousing environment.
It was really loud in there, 100 decibels about.
Yeah, so. What happened was that he actually prepared the dog for, and the dog did get adopted.
Yeah.
And he's doing great.
Yeah. So, I mean, most of the time we can't do this with shelter dogs because there's just not enough time in the day to do it. But it's the kind of thing I'm talking about here, is that you would be amazed at what you can do if you actually go, okay, 5 minutes, twice a day, we're going to work on this relaxation protocol, or just sits and downs, or sits and stays and walking around, and sits and stays and walking around, so that he goes, oh, this is the rule. Because when he's making up his own rules, then you can't make inroads on him. Mm-hmm. But if he's going, oh, this is the rule that happens when I go out into this room, I'm going to do a sit and I'm going to do a stay. And then if time permits, you can start working on it with the other dogs. But because he's the major problem, or one of the major problems, at least in this area, and you live a stressful life, pick on that and just go, okay, first of all, we're gonna manage. We're gonna make sure the dog is going to crate once or twice a day for a period of 15 minutes. Calm down, everything's good, come on out, play. They need that anyway, it's good for them. And then you get this, and work on him with this. And then once you started working on that stay, then start working on the doorbell. Because they need to understand the doorbell.
And if I get my neighbor to come over, at what point should that happen, and how
When he has a sit stay. So you might, if you're working on it every day, you might be 6, 7, 8 days into it, and you're going, okay, I'm getting something good here. Then you ring the doorbell and you'll find out how bad it is. Because what happens is as soon as you add something new into it, it's good.
Yeah.
And so then you work on that for maybe 2 or 3 days, and then you start asking your friend to come over.
And so he would come over and
he would just
go
over and ring the doorbell and just stand there. And then thank you, go away. And then he'd come in, and then stand and come inside. So you have to work on it a little bit by a little bit. And you know, you can do it with the doorbell yourself, or you can do it with the
people. So he shouldn't have any interaction with the dogs, or not say anything to him?
Not at first, after a while for sure. After a while, you would put him on a sit, the guy would come in and sit down. And by that time, he's starting to think, oh, he's not dangerous. I thought he was dangerous. Mm-hmm. I mean, I hate to say, but this is, it's work. It's definitely work.
Yeah.
You can't do this stuff without work. Mm-hmm. Just ask Joel, months, huh? Yeah. Well, you did it, you saved his life probably. So
my favorite thing was that the family reported that he's a really mellow dog or something.
I said he's amazing.
Amazing. Yeah. And then he's calm now.
Yeah, because he was living in an overstimulated environment. And your dogs are living in an overstimulated environment. Mm-hmm. And you have to be able to try to figure out a way to calm that.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody else have any?
My brain, all dogs have to do everything together. I'm just taking one at a time out. But really, you know, I have a friend who had 4 dogs. She's aggressive. She teaches an aggressive dog class and ends up with all these dogs that are going to get euthanized if she doesn't take them. So she can't let them all out at the same time. And really breaking down the idea that every dog has to do everything with me all the time. and really, you know, does, is that true? And I find that walks me to the core, because of course all my dogs have to go with me everywhere.
Yeah.
But it's like, that may not have to happen.
Actually, it shouldn't happen. You should train each, if you have three dogs, each of your dogs should be trained separately and then together.
Yeah.
I used to offer a two-cruise class at the Marine Humane Society, which was a lot of fun because we trained, all the dogs have already had a family dog level two, so they already supposedly had some behaviors under their belt. And then we would teach the dogs not only to do things separately, but separately, then together, then separately again, then together again. And they, you know, so they actually got way better. You can't train more than one dog at a time.
It's so hard.
You know, even the best trainers in the world train one dog at a time and then they train them together. Mm-hmm. So I think one of the issues when you have multiple dogs is that you get overwhelmed too easily. And there's every reason that you get too overwhelmed too easily. It's because it's overwhelming. It's an impossibility to do that. And again, you know, shelters deal with this on a day-by-day basis. There are too many dogs. You're always feeling too many dogs, and you're dealing with it every day. You have too many dogs. Mm-hmm. And, you know, overpopulation is a real problem. But you love them all, you want to keep them all, so you have to kind of work with it.
And I didn't know that you can't teach dogs, train dogs, at once. It just didn't occur to me that that's not possible, you know.
Yeah.
And so I tried some things and it didn't work, so I just give
so
up and kind of just damage control.
Mm-hmm.
Control.
Damage control.
Yeah.
Because you're getting frustrated.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, because they're not listening.
And I find sometimes it takes me a year to get a behavior. Like if I'm just working a couple times a day, like if my dog in my shop wants to kill skateboarders, uh-huh. And now she'll bark at skateboarders, but she comes to me to get a treat rather than try to get.
Oh, so you got the Sophie thing, yeah.
Yeah, and she just got at the end of the leash. And the first week I had her, she got away from me chasing a skateboarder down the street. And now if she's away, gets away from me, she looks at me for a treat when she hears a skateboarder. And if I hear a skateboarder and she's not around, I'm like, where do I get a dog a treat? It really took a long time to make that solid. So really looking for it as a quick fix, it's not, but just.
Note
the little progressions
that
it takes a long time.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. It was interesting when I put my hand next to his eyes went boing. So he's definitely very suspicious. And I would like to say that, you know, he was a great puppy and adolescence is when most behavior problems begin. It's just like with children. Adolescents, 12, 13-year-old kids, is when schizophrenia happens, it's when any kind of behavior problems happen, is that adolescence is the changes in the brain that actually, that stimulate these things that occur that are bad, that we don't like. And so an awful lot of really nice puppies suddenly become wacko adults.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not our fault. I mean, it might be our fault in that we're reading them wrong, I don't know, but it isn't necessarily that they were raised wrong, or anything like that. That's not the issue. The issue is that different animals have different behaviors. And most of them are in the wild would actually be pretty useful. Although I'm not sure that barking would be very useful.
What is the purpose of barking?
It's a neotenized behavior. It is a puppy behavior that got carried through into adulthood because of what we did in breeding.
And I also, my theory is, you know, if you get a dog that starts vocalizing and there's a saber-toothed tiger around and wakes you up in the middle of the night, we like the dogs that barked when there was a time.
It would just be like a wolf bark is like an alarm bark. It's
yeah.
Like two or three barks, as opposed to a I am here bark.
Yeah.
I'm over here, keep barking, and you're going to get me too, saber-toothed tiger. So, coyotes will howl and bark. When they find prey, when they're chasing prey, if the prey is getting away, so they're like calling other coyotes to come and get it. And sometimes apparently they do like a, I got it prey, that's a real hearing lately. But, and wolves will do a bark, an orienting bark. So if the wolves are hunting in a group, one wolf will bark to say, I'm over here, another group, but it's just one short bark to say, I'm here, I'm over here, I'm over here, we got the caribou, let's take them that way. But puppies bark to say, Mom, please feed me. some puppies actually bark more. Wolf puppies bark more. And fox puppies, all of them bark more. They don't still don't bark as much as our dogs do. But when we started taking these big, you know, these dogs and keeping them in a state of arrested development, that's one of the things that we got as a side effect. And I'm very sorry. But I did, I had a client the other day, it was an actually a really interesting case. She has a, can somebody let her out?
Speaking of barking.
Such a pen.
So, this case was a, what is that, is it Cavalier King Charles Spaniel? Is that a calf? I think it was a Cavalier. Anyway, it's a purebred dog. They got it from rescue. The dog had been used as a breeder, but apparently had never had been socialized. So, no, it's a beagle. I remember it's a beagle. Think of the right color, right? And the biggest behavior problem is that at night, she's really, really feral. So she goes and sits on a couch and just sits there. And she now loves the owner and her husband, but she doesn't want anybody else to touch her. But at night, she'll go out the dog door and she'll get in a huge, huge yard. She'll go all the way to the end of the yard and start barking, and she won't stop barking. So, and you've all heard beagles, right?
Oh, yeah.
So, and the neighbors are complaining like crazy. So we talked about a wide variety of things to do to try to help her behavior because she's so feral. Just really nice people, the best owners possible for this dog. But they weren't thinking about management at all. And I said, okay, your yard is too big, you know. Your yard is too big. So they're gonna do an X-pan that will disallow her from running away because they can't catch her. There's no way they can catch her. And they had a dog sitter, and the dog sitter couldn't catch her either. So, you know, it's just really been bad. And so they were asking me about debarking, and they said their veterinarian didn't want to do debarking, and I said, well, most don't. And she said it was cruel. And I said, well, if you ask the dog whether they'd rather lose their voice or their balls, they'd probably tell you they'd rather lose their voice. So cruelty is what we think it is. Cruelty is not necessarily what the dog thinks it is. And in the case of a dog like this, because this is the biggest issue, I said, I would rather not go that route. That would be probably better not to. But at the same time, if it saves her life, is it not a possibility? But, oh, I've gotten myself in so much trouble with that one. Because to me, it's like, oh, for crying out loud. We dock their tails, we crop their ears, we take away their sexual organs, and then we say taking away their voices is cruel. You know, it reaches, our morality is so peculiar. It really is. So, yeah, that's one of the things you can do for barking, is debark. Right, Aspen? She says you would. I am such a sucker for this dog.
Yes.
That I wouldn't even put a citronella collar. I mean, I did for about 10 minutes, and that's about it. That's why we do our other stuff. Okay, any questions? So next week we're gonna be, not next week, next week we're off. The week after that we'll be talking about resource guarding issues, familial aggression. If anybody does have a consult they would like to, I was gonna get an outside person and we might still do that, but if we do a consult, that would be fine. People like consults, yeah?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Okay, sorry. All right, I have a lot run out of voice. I will see you in a couple of weeks.
So, okay. Before.